You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio will soon be raising a glass to celebrate the city's 300th year of existence. And what should be in that glass? Well, beer is the only appropriate drink because we built this city on hops and ale. We're talking about San Antonio's beer history with the authors of a new book, San Antonio Beer, Alamo City History by the Pint. And welcome Jeremy Bonas and Travis Poling. Welcome back to Source, Travis.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Our phone lines are open if you want to talk about beer in San Antonio, the earliest days into what we're doing right now as we're doing a beer renaissance in the city. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Jeremy, why is San Antonio such a beer town?
San Antonio's really always been a beer town, dating back to 1855 when the Western Brewery was opened up on the future site of the Menger Hotel. And in fact, as a legend of the hotel goes, the hotel was built because of the brewery. Well, the ale was popular enough and strong enough that not just the residents, but people from around the southwest area of Texas were coming into San Antonio to drink this beer that was becoming quite popular. But it was strong enough that, as again, local legend goes, people were falling asleep at the bar and not able to make it home. So William Menger and his wife, who had a boarding house nearby, decided to go ahead and build a hotel. So they moved the brewery underground into the natural tunnels that are down there and built the hotel right on top, and the brewery remained underground.
So there are natural tunnels under the Menger Hotel?
Yes.
And this is, of course, right next to the Alamo.
Right.
So were these tunnels, I mean, this is how they could have snuck out.
Very possibly.
This is a part of the Sequoia Madre Ditch, where they were getting that were dug by the Spanish missionaries and the natives back when the Alamo was actually a mission. And that was the water source that brought the water in from the San Antonio River. And so, of course, they took advantage of that natural water source.
So the Menger becomes, I've seen it in the Texas Handbook of History, Travis, so you can argue with that if you'd like. The Menger Hotel, according to that, is the oldest brewery in the state.
What we were able to find out is that it opened in 1855. In the 1850 census, there were 19 people who were listed as either brewers, distillers, or winemakers. And most of those were German, and that was all over the state. There were no manufacturing licenses, however, for any of those things. And so what we've discovered is that in New Braunfels, Julius Rennert, who was in 1845, came over from Germany, settled New Braunfels, was mayor pro tem at one point, founded their singing society, and of course sort of switched over to making beer because there was a demand for it. We probably started doing it in the late 40s, and he probably built his brewery that he kept open for several decades right around the same time as the Western Brewery opened in San Antonio. And so he was probably brewing beer commercially before that. He just was doing it kind of without a license at the time in the new state of Texas.
Who needs a license?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need no stinking license if we're going to brew beer, especially in New Braunfels, and start the worst fest long before all these other issues have developed. But so how recognizable was this beer? Is this something that we would drink today, or was it skunk water?
Well, as a matter of fact, we can drink it today. That was one thing we did with the book. We were able to research enough, and I was able to recreate probably the closest recipe to that original beer that was brewed at the Western.
What goes into that?
Well, there were some clues in miscellaneous articles in the late 1800s and in the early 1900s, a lot of it in the San Antonio Light. Charles Deegan, who is the brewmaster at the Western, coincidentally was also the first subscriber to the San Antonio Light back in the 1800s. But there were listings of purchase orders from the Menger Hotel and descriptions of the beer that gave clues to the ingredients, but he never published the recipe. He never shared the recipe. So it was taking all of those clues, looking at what ales Germans were brewing at that time, because this was an ale and not a lager, which was prevalent, determining the style And I researched even with maltsters in Germany that are over 100 years old to get, you know, what would be the closest proximate malt that would be used now for that beer. And after about a good month, finally put together what, again, I believe is the closest possible recipe to that original beer.
And what is that like? What is it comparable to?
It's the style of the beer was an alt beer, German alt beer, kind of a German amber ale. Alt beers are actually still brewed today. Now, an alt beer now is going to be a little bit different than an alt beer from the 1800s.
So it was like Schlitz.
Only a little bit better, I hope. but there was one unique thing that Charles Deegan, the brewmaster, did, and he incorporated peel and CO sugar. The sugar that you get, that brown sugar you get in a cone at the grocery store, he used that in the beer. So that was definitely something very different. So it gives kind of a molasses, kind of a feel to the beer when you go to consume it.
And was the beer, Travis, was it cold or hot? How was it?
You know,
did it have bubbles?
Yeah, it would have had bubbles. It would have had natural carbonation to it. And they were pretty good at doing that. It would have been much flatter, I guess, than what we would consider today. You know, most beers are pretty heavily, you know, carbonated that people do when they pop open the can or the bottle. And it was probably not cold. It was probably cellar temperature. And, of course, in Texas, that may mean something else than in Germany or England. But they would store it in cellars.
In bottles or in tap?
They would have it in kegs, and then sometimes they would bottle it also in some fairly large, usually large bottles.
And for this particular style of beer, those colder temperatures in the tunnels were very conducive to the aging.
And how long would they age it?
Usually a couple of months, sometimes a little bit less.
Was the aging part of the fermentation process, or that was separate?
That was after the fermentation process. So after the fermentation was completed, which is the yeast consuming the sugars and converting it to alcohol, then they'd move it into a secondary vessel to age it at a slightly colder temperature.
Okay, so this is at the Minger, and this is kind of how things were done in the early 19th century, around 1840, 1850s, up into... Mm-hmm. In 1877, we saw the railroad come into San Antonio. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. How did that change the beer industry, Travis?
It really changed the face of it a lot. For one thing, so Augustus Busch, who owned was part owner of Anheuser-Busch of St. Louis, he also co-owned independently outside of that company a lot of breweries around Texas, including the original Lone Star Brewery, where San Antonio Museum of Art is now, and that was. So that was before they were really using the railroads to ship a lot of beer here, and so they were trying to have little local outposts. And the Pearl was on the rise. So while we were getting – while some of the smaller breweries like Minger, like Rennert, and a bunch of others kind of felt the pinch of beers coming in on the railroad from – particularly from St. Louis, so maybe from Milwaukee – at the same time as Pearl and Lone Star grew, they were taking advantage of the railroad to basically become major players all over the Southwest.
All right. We're talking about San Antonio beer history. San Antonio-shaped beer in beer-shaped San Antonio. How did this happen? Give us a call if you got a comment, a question. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Right back in 1 minute. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Between 1890 and 1918, San Antonio, Texas. Let me start again. Between 1890 and 1918, Texas had as many as 43 breweries. Many, however, started and then they didn't really last very long because they couldn't really compete with many of San Antonio's breweries. Out of the 43 of these, 17 were in San Antonio, and many were operated under the same plants that were many under different names. They would change names frequently, but San Antonio was known as a brewing kind of town, and we're talking about that with the authors of a new book, Jeremy Banas and Travis Poling. Their book is called San Antonio Beer, Alamo City History by the Pint, and tonight they are doing a book signing at the Twig. Is that right, Travis?
Yes, 6 to 8.
At the Pearl.
Yes, at the
Pearl. Which is very appropriate.
And we'll have samples from Southerly there at the book signing, the brew pub that's in the old Pearl Brew House.
So if you got someone in your life you're looking for a Christmas present for, you can't figure out what they – but they like beer. Maybe they – and they like history. Maybe they would like to have this book. Let's get a caller on the air. Samir is on the line. Samir, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hello? And are you there? I think he's there. Well, let's go to our next caller then, Jody. Jody, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, you know, I have tons of friends who come to visit me from Europe, and what I often do is take them kind of on an unofficial beer tour of San Antonio, starting at the Pearl, and then they have a great beer selection at Stella, then along to the Friendly Spot, the Filling Station, and the Luxury, and everyone is really always amazed and really, really happy about how well beer is represented in our city. We were super excited about Southerly, too, since they brew their own beer, but they're beer prices are a little high, so we sometimes have to skip over that one. But, man, there's so many wonderful places to go along the river. We do it on our bikes usually and experience the wonderful beer selection in San Antonio.
And, Jody, did you know that San Antonio had a rich beer past?
No, I mean, I guess I kind of did because I know of our German heritage in the city. But, you know, I'd never really, you know, thought it through, I guess.
Okay, Jeremy, thanks. Jody, thanks for the call. And so let me ask you, Jeremy, what did San Antonians drink for fun before the Germans showed up?
Well, there was a lot of wine and a lot of whiskey.
Okay, and so I guess local grapes? Did they do their own wine?
They did. Grapes are difficult to grow in Texas, and although we up in the hill country have quite a lot of wineries, the soil wasn't quite as conducive back then to it. So although we didn't look into the wine quite as much at that point, didn't find any evidence of any vineyards actually in the area.
So there really wasn't a locally produced scene to create, some sort of spirits?
There might have been a little bit of distilling. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. We had a lot of folks here from Tennessee and Kentucky who died at the Alamo, and probably a few of them had a little moonshining skills under their belt. And, you know, some of that stuff would, you know, come in on wagons as part of the supplies.
They would
usually water ox trains. They would water it down. And of course, you know, you did back in even in the 1600s, 1700s, it was a lot of wine. You did probably have some wines being made from local ingredients, maybe even besides wild grapes, they could make it from mesquite beans. I've actually had mesquite bean wine before. They just worked with what they had.
People
are
very ingenious when it comes to finding something to drink.
But when we were a Spanish colony, we did find in the Spanish archives of San Antonio several bills of lading, I guess you'd call them, for wines that came from Spain through Mexico up into San Antonio to the mm-hmm. missions.
Long trip. Let's get Samir. He's now on the line. Let's get him on the air. Samir,
hey,
hi.
Guys. Hey, sorry about that earlier. Hey, guys, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Just wanted to ask the guys a couple questions. Real quick, what's your current local beer that you're drinking? What's in your fridge, essentially, I guess, that's local right now that you're drinking and you like? And second, what was the kind of oddest or quirkiest story or thing you found along the journey of writing this book for the history of San Antonio and beer?
Okay, Jeremy, go first.
Well, right now I've got pretty much one of just about everybody's local beers in the fridge at home. Of course, I am on beer fridge number 3, so it's a hard...
Well, you have 3 beer fridges?
Well, 4 now, but we're not counting.
And these are big, these are not little tiny dorm room ones.
No, two hold bottles.
You need to, the first problem, denial is a, you need treatment. Okay, and something quirky you found.
Well, one thing in researching the first part of the Pearl's history from when it was formed as the San Antonio Brewing Association in 1883 up to the very end of Prohibition in 1933, was one of its prominent founders and later president of the association, Otto Kaler, was married to an immigrant as well from Germany, whose name was Emma. Emma, in the early 1900s, had gotten into an auto accident and was in the at the house being cared for by a nurse that was brought in. Her name was also Emma. Kaler started to have an affair with the nurse named Emma. Well, Emma had a friend also named Emma, who he started to have an affair with as well, and at one point built a cottage for the two Emmas. And long story short, at one point, depending on which story you believe, he goes over for whatever reason, and one of the two Emmas shoots him. And it was a big old scandal at the time, but that's what's become is the story of the three Emmas. And that was, you know, sort of the as the world turns of the early 1900s at that time.
Wow. His wife went on to become a very powerful executive after that what later became the Pearl Brewery.
Yes.
And that's why we have the Hotel
Emma.
Yes.
Correct. They even have a drink called the Three Emmas on
yes.
their menu.
Okay. Now we know that story. So, Travis, you're what's in your fridge? What's your quirky story?
Well, I just have a small fridge for my beer. It rotates out a lot. In the summer months, I kept a lot of Freetail Bat out of Helles and Alamo Pilsner, just really crisp and refreshing beers in old German styles, but very distinctly San Antonio. Now it's kind of turning towards some of the heavier ones like Woodcutter Rye IPA from Branchline and some of the Ranger Creek Sunday Morning Coming Down with Brewed with Coffee, which you kind of need on these cold mornings. So, and for me, I think one of my favorite stories is one that Jeremy actually came across in his research, and it was when the and you talked earlier about sort of the Wild West aspect of San Antonio, when William Minger was married, a lot of people came out because the position of brewer was very important in the city at that time, and the whole community came out, and the person who later became Bishop of Galveston, the first bishop in Texas for the Catholic Church, came up from Castroville on foot to do the wedding. And when they found out he came on foot, they said, well, we would have sent you a horse if we knew you're coming. And he said, well, I didn't want a horse because if I had a horse, the Indians would have shot it out from under me.
Okay. That's pretty wild. Another caller on the air, Jody. Hi, Jody. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on the air. Listen, is there anybody in San Antonio brewing organic beer, or if not, will there ever be anybody brewing organic?
Yes. Blue Star Brewing Company, which was the first brew pub that still exists in San Antonio. It's on South Alamo Street, and several years ago they went to all organic ingredients where they could find them. So it's largely organic beer. It's kind of hard to do it completely, but that's the closest you're going to find in San Antonio.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be something that'll get more prominent going forward.
Now, Jay is called in. Hi, Jay. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling to find out if your guest could comment on the early brewmeister's accessibility to hops and bittering agents. You know, as any home brewer in San Antonio knows, we just don't have the climate to grow our own hops. And back then, whole leaf wouldn't travel very well. And pelletization really didn't exist. So what did they use to bitter their beer?
Well, they used hops. Although hops are clearly not native to Texas, and you're correct, not conducive in growing in Texas. The soil just doesn't work for it. Hops were brought in largely via Galveston and then New Orleans before that into San Antonio and into Texas. In New Orleans, there were a couple of brewing suppliers that would get their hops from the Northeast or from Ohio and from St. Louis and Kansas City.
So they would ship them in.
Yeah, so they would ship them in. So
they
were using hops.
Way to keep them fresh.
Absolutely.
Okay, Clayton has called in. Clayton, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up a point. I don't want to throw a wet blanket over the celebration, but it's not all beer and Skittles. I worked for Pearl for 8 years before they closed. We didn't go out of business because we ran out of money or anything else. We went out of business because the Riverwalk extension project was finally went through after being voted down two or three times. The rumor was that our city fathers or certain people who were in the know got rich off of that land that they had bought up on the San Antonio River. And there were about 250 good union jobs. I might be wrong on that, but there are quite a few of us who are unemployed because of that, and it's ironic to see the hipsters rustling around in the remains of our employment, wondering, oh, this is
okay.
This stuff is so
I got
great.
We're running out of time, so I got your point. Got to let you go, Clayton. Thanks for the call. And real quickly, does that mesh up with how you?
No, actually, I covered that as a business reporter for the Express News at the time. All the union negotiations and everything. What it was is that there was a lot of. And we address this in the book, so I urge you to read it. It's a good glimpse. But the main thing was that they were just trying to cut costs. Eventually, Pabst Brewing Company, which owned Pearl, shut down every single brewery and outsourced it to Miller. And it was all
already,
about
they already
cost.
Shipped them to Olympia to mm-hmm. brew
yeah,
long
they,
before they even talked down. About the extension of the Riverwalk.
Correct, correct.
And they had abandoned that site.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Well, I want to thank both of you guys. Tonight, the Twig at the Pearl signing party, San Antonio Beer, Alamo City History by the Pint, Jeremy Bonas and Travis Poling. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
This is The Source on KSTX.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flav and David Martin Davies. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Between the national news and local headlines, the big happenings in state news frequently get overlooked, but not on Texas Matters. Laws and policies that come from Austin can actually have a stronger impact on your life than Washington, D.C. Issues of education, public health, roads, environment, criminal justice, and border security. That's why Texas Matters is on the air. Tune in to Texas Matters, Friday at 3:30 and Sunday night at 9:30 on KSTX 89.1 FM.